Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. We begin today by remembering a New York City icon who has died at 88 and another one very much alive at 100 years old. The late icon is, of course, former Mayor Ed Koch. Ironically, a new documentary about his life and mayoralty opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Theater on the Upper West Side. As many of you heard on Wednesday, the director was on our show, and we aired this clip from the film. This is Ed Koch reading the epitaph that he wrote for himself, already engraved on his headstone.
He was fiercely proud of his Jewish faith. He fiercely defended the city of New York, and he fiercely loved its people. Above all, he loved his country, the United States of America, in whose armed forces he served in World War II. And that's the whole thing.
Ed Koch reading the epitaph he wrote for himself, as it appears on his headstone and in the movie Koch, which opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema. You can hear our full interview with the director, Neil Barsky, including more excerpts from the film on our webpage. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll also talk more about Koch during the show today, including a segment later on Ed Koch's final battle, how he managed to throw his weight around even in his mid-80s to fight for nonpartisan redistricting in New York State. But for now, on to a different New York icon, officially celebrating its 100th birthday year today. It is Grand Central Terminal, which opened February 2nd, 1913. And we would like to hear from you. What do you think of as your piece of Grand Central? 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Do you have memories of bidding farewell to someone in the so-called kissing room? Do you ever stop by the Campbell apartment bar for a drink and some nostalgia? Or do you enjoy noticing all the hidden acorns scattered throughout the terminal? Call us up right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'd also love to hear your perspective on how the landmark has changed throughout the years. What do you remember about Grand Central in its years of decline, perhaps? Or maybe your memory is of being homeless in Grand Central. We'll talk later with George McDonald from the Doe Fund, who has worked with Grand Central Homeless for 25 years and is now running for mayor. But whatever your memory or whatever your piece of Grand Central, you can give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. One of the attendees at today's celebration is Kurt Schlichting. He's the author of Grand Central Terminal, Railroads, Engineering, and Architecture in New York City, and professor of sociology and anthropology at Fairfield University. So he's already come through Grand Central once today, and we managed to snag him before he heads back for more events. Welcome to WNYC, Professor Schlichting. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And is it just another day of commuting for somebody who happens upon Grand Central today, or can you tell that there's a significant anniversary on the horizon?
Well, you can certainly tell. Some of the gates from the platforms were closed, and commuters were directed to the east or west side of the Grand Concourse, and the Grand Concourse is all lit up. There is a magnificent array behind the east staircase, and that's where the ceremonies will take place later this morning.
And so, what kinds of ceremonies? What are they going
to do? Well, there's going to be a rededication of the terminal. Carolyn Kennedy is going to be there representing her mother, Jackie Onassis. There will be some representatives of the Vanderbilt family. There'll later be an exhibit in the Vanderbilt Radio Room. So there's a whole series of events planned for today as part of this 100-year celebration.
Caroline Kennedy remembering her mother, Jackie Onassis, who actually played a role in the history of Grand Central Terminal, right?
She certainly did. She played a very important role. After the destruction of Pennsylvania Station, the Penn Central Railroad, which was going bankrupt at the time, wanted to tear down Grand Central and build another high-rise office building. And that sparked a revolt among many New Yorkers, including Jackie Onassis, and she helped spearhead a committee to save Grand Central. Which they eventually did.
And by the way, that was right around the start of the Koch administration, wasn't it?
It was. It was at the start of the Koch administration.
Did he play a role?
Well, I think what Mayor Koch contributed was to begin the march of New York back from the abyss. And his story is also the story of Grand Central, the rebirth of Grand Central, the rebirth of the New York Public Library, the rebirth of Central Park.
So was he on a side between the preservationists and the developers?
I believe he was on the side of the preservationists. The city passed its landmark preservation law. That was a landmark law, the first in the country. Grand Central was the second landmark designated. And, of course, that set off a series of lawsuits, which ended up in the Supreme Court.
Anne in the East Village is going to tie all these themes together, I think, as our first caller. Hi, Anne.
Good morning. Yeah, my main memory of being in Grand Central was when I worked on the 36th floor of the Pan Am building right above Grand Central, and in my daily commute, I had to parade down those escalators, and he was shaking everyone's hands as you got out into the terminal. And I always thought he was a cool dude, and that it's an amazing coincidence.
Anne, thank you very much. Jack in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jack. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Back in May of 1957, I left from Grand Central when it really was a hub for whole continental travel, and I took a train to Los Angeles.
Wow.
And I would have taken the 20th century to Chicago, but the 20th century didn't run on Saturdays, so I took the Commodore Vanderbilt, and in Chicago I changed for the Super Chief to Los Angeles, and it really was exciting.
Awesome, Jack. Remembering the names of the train lines. And is that true, Professor? You could take cross-country trains from Grand Central at that terminal? Because today I think they leave from Penn Station.
They do leave from Penn Station, yes. Of course you could. The upper level of the terminal was devoted to the long-distance trains, and it was quite a thrill for New Yorkers to come to the station and, for example, board the 20th Century Limited to Chicago. But you could take a long-distance trains to Vermont, upstate New York, Cleveland, Detroit, St. Louis from Grand Central.
And closer terminal. To home, people say that Grand Central played a role in creating the suburbs. Do you say that?
It did. The lower level was devoted to the commuter trains. And with the new electric service that started from Grand Central when it opened, the suburbs in Westchester County and in Connecticut, they grew dramatically.
Alex in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Alex, turn your radio off. Hi.
Yes, let me turn the radio off. My memories are three, basically. One of the many films that were filmed, I'm sure, in Grand Central was Barbara Streisand and Nick Nolte in The Prince of Tides, around 1990-1991. Another one was Time. It was called Fault Watch Company, a watch repair shop on the third floor. I used to take my expensive watches there. And he's been long gone. Tony was featured way back in different magazines. And the third one, my good friend Jacques from Strasbourg, who was an oyster connoisseur, loved the oyster place and loved the new heavens open to him in Grand Central.
Thank you very much. By the new heavens, I wonder if he means the view up of the rotunda.
Well, it's what the view is the restored Grand Concourse, and that was a decade-long effort to do that, and it's really magnificent. It looks today, hopefully, as it did in 1913.
And that sky mural is actually, as I understand it, a mirror image of the night sky, meaning it's a mistake, but it was retroactively justified as being God's view of the constellations.
Yes, that's exactly true.
And some other fun facts about Grand Central. The Oyster Bar is the only remaining original tenant. Does that mean it was there 100 years ago?
It was there 100 years ago. It was part of the planning for the building.
What else was there 100 years ago that would be interesting to know about?
Well, the pathways, for example, the color, the green color that you see now throughout the terminal, that was a New York Central green. And in the restoration, they searched high and low to find some remaining paint, and then once they did, they used that paint to restore the color scheme of 1913.
Another one, Edward R. Murrow's See It Now, used to broadcast out of CBS Studios in Grand Central Terminal. Platform 61 is the secret platform. What does that mean? It's as I understand it, it was used to transport FDR to the Waldorf Astoria and help keep his polio out of the public eye.
The train tracks run all the way north to the basement of the Waldorf Astoria. I had an opportunity to walk out there years ago with some of the Metro North people, and there is an elevator there. And when the president would arrive, his car would be shuttled to that track, and he'd be lifted off the train by the Secret Service, and he'd ride up to the presidential suite in the Waldorf Astoria.
And I've read about a piece of history that I don't know if it's actually true, that there was a Nazi plot foiled during World War II. Four operatives tried to get into a secret sub-basement of Grand Central known as M42 and disrupt service.
Yes, that's under where the new food court is these days. But there's an elevator that will take you 90 feet down below the ground level. And in that space were the electrical equipment that powered Grand Central Terminal. And in fact, the railroad line throughout Manhattan. And there was great concern that that would be a place where saboteurs would target.
So a war that we never think of as being fought on our homeland may have had at least that little Grand Central connection.
It does have that little Grand Central connection.
Elizabeth in Scarsdale, you're on WNYC on the 100th birthday of Grand Central Terminal. Hello.
Hello. Our favorite place to go is right outside the Oyster Bar, where the architecture is designed in such a way that if you stand in opposite corners and face into the corner, you can hear the other person talk.
I think that's the architecture of the rotunda.
Yes.
I've never tried it there, but I know that when I toured the Capitol building, they showed us in D.C. that you could do exactly that there. And these rotundas are kind of similar. So
yeah. And so we go there, we take guests there, and if you walk by, you might see somebody standing in the corner, and it looks a little odd, but that's what they're doing.
Elizabeth, thank you.
Every day you see people standing there whispering to friends and family on the other side of the rotunda.
Carola in Midtown, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
And I'm a bit of a wet blanket. I love, love, love Grand Central. But the escalators have been broken for, I think, a couple of months. And it's upsetting. You know, I don't know when they're going to fix them.
And I don't know if that's up your alley as a historian of Grand Central Terminal, but maybe it's part of a theme of the need for constant upkeep.
Well, that's true, and the escalators were not part of the original design. They were added during the restoration so that people could more easily travel between the lower level and the upper level concourse. And yes, they have been broken for a number of months.
As somebody who studied Grand Central's history from its construction through today, are you surprised that it has survived in as close to its original state as it has?
No, I think it's one of New York's great buildings. And in the 60s and then in the 70s, when New York began to think seriously about preserving its architectural past, Grand Central is the first building that comes to mind, and it was saved.
Leanne in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Leanne.
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
I was naked in Grand Central Station. About 10 years ago, October 2003, Spencer Tunick had one of his naked installation photograph things, and there were 450 women. About 3 in the morning, we waited in a corridor, and then at a certain point, they said, okay, take off your clothes, and we all did, and we padded into the main hall. I think we had an hour for the shoot, and the thing I remember, well, I love walking into Grand Central and thinking, I was naked here, but I also remember the railroad workers and the cops who were, like, working. That was their shift, and the smiles on their faces. It was like they got the best duty, you know, of all. It was like 450 naked women.
I guess so, but just don't put that photo on your Facebook page or you'll never be hired again. Leanne, thank you. What a great story. You wrote a book, Professor, called Grand Central's Engineer, William J. Wilgus and the Planning of Modern Manhattan. And it's about a figure who most of our listeners have never heard of, but who was instrumental in building Grand Central and you consider to be lost to history. Who was William J. Wilgus?
At the time, he was the chief engineer of the New York Central Railroad. And really, it's his plan that we see. He wasn't the architect, but he conceived of the entire monumental project, a two-story underground train yard, electrification, a new terminal building, and then using what he called the air rights above the underground train yard to basically construct Park Avenue that we see north of Grand Central Terminal. And he imagined all of this and wrote a three-page letter to the president of the railroad in 1903, and he proposed this monumental project.
There's a plaque going up, I see, with his name on it. Certain technical innovations that we can credit him for. And I wonder if there are more to come. The Long Island Railroad will come into Grand Central Terminal in addition to Penn Station if planners get their way.
Yeah, the Long Island Railroad will come into Grand Central, and that will change the commuting patterns for hundreds of thousands of Long Island residents who work in the city. They'll be able to reach Midtown much more easily than they can now going to Pennsylvania Station. I think it's part of an investment in the infrastructure of the city, which includes its mass transit, its crucial mass transit.
One more memory from Florence in Brooklyn. Florence, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. In the 60s or 70s, my friend Jay Fairberg, who knew the city very well, took me up a back elevator up on the upper floors and opened a door, and we found ourselves walking on glass, and the light bulbs were on the bottom of this glass, and it was just a spectacular experience that there was this, I guess the guys who had to change the light bulbs would go up there, and that's how they would change the light bulbs, but you're actually walking on top of the glass, and it was a spectacular view.
What a great experience. Did you ever have it, Professor?
I did. I've walked through the East and West Concourse, and it's wonderful to be in the Grand Concourse, and you'll be looking up at the light streaming through to the west, and all of a sudden the figure will emerge and slowly walk across the pathway.
Last thing, for purists who like to say, it's not Grand Central Station, it's Grand Central Terminal. It's actually both, isn't it?
No, it's actually a terminal. The trains end there. That's the definition of a terminal.
But my understanding is, for the railroad, it's Grand Central Terminal. For the subways, it's Grand Central Station.
It is for Grand Central Station because the subway connections are right adjacent to the terminal, which, by the way, is part of why it works.
Professor Kurt Schlichting from Fairfield University, author of Grand Central Terminal, Railroads, Engineering, and Architecture of New York City. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Ceremonies all day at Grand Central if you happen to be passing through. The official birthday, 100 years tomorrow. It's just like